Welcome to the Infrastructure Show. I'm your host, Professor Joseph Schoffer of Northwestern University. The Infrastructure Show is designed to present to listeners the reality of America's infrastructure, its condition, why it is the way it is, and what can be done about it. We gratefully acknowledge contributions to sustain the Infrastructure Show from Dr. Robert Peskin, Dr. Raymond Ellis, and Andrea and Ron DeFeo. Irving, Texas, a city of about 255,000 people near Dallas, has been growing fast, and its water supply and wastewater management systems need to meet and get ahead of the demands. Irving has established a citywide program to maintain and extend its water, wastewater, and stormwater management systems. And here today to discuss this large-scale program is Walt Thomas, who's city engineer for Irving. Walt received his BS degree in civil engineering from Texas Tech University and an MS in public administration from the University of Texas. Walt, I'm really happy to talk with you today about this project.
Well, very good. I'm glad to be here and to visit with you.
Good. Excellent. So can you give us an overview of the total program, the various components and the scale and your principal targets?
Well, the overall, looking at the bigger picture of our program and what we have programmed here in our department is the Capital Improvement Program Department. We have the task to not only look for the funding, manage the design, manage the bidding, manage the construction, but also looking at the maintenance side. So we do have all those components we have in mind. Our program right now, we are managing about $400 million in capital projects. Just water, wastewater, we have $73 million that we are actively constructing and designing for. Our street department's also pretty robust at $88 million. And then our facilities, we have various fire stations and rec centers. Those are $89 million. And our drainage, we have $61 million in just our drainage channels that we're upgrading. So we have all those projects that we are trying to push through. And council has been very supportive of the effort by providing our bond, approving bonds and getting those bonds either through to the citizens for vote for our GO, general obligation bonds, or working with our certificate of obligations to help us get those projects. Just of note, we have received over $45 million from the state, from the Texas Water Board, Development Board, Texas Water Development Board, in funding for our channels, and we are now applying for another $70 million for our channels from the TWDB. So we are pretty robust, not only looking at bonds, what we have in cash, and then, but also looking at grants and other help from the federal government or state.
So this is a big set of projects that you're doing. This is not your kind of normal operation, is it?
This, we have been at this pace for about 8-10 years. We've been at this level of activity, and we haven't waned. And I've heard some cities here in the North Texas area, at least North Texas, several that have to pull back on some of their programming. With our council, we have we're always looking at the 5-year out, looking at the forecast. And 5 years, we even go to council for a resolution from them to support maybe our drainage program through our drainage fees that we charge the residents. So we have this resolution that they will agree to increase maybe the drainage a dollar more each year, and then we collect it each month. So we're very proactive, securing the funding, working with council, getting our support. So there's no let up in sight.
That's pretty amazing. It seems to me so what's your annual outlay for capital expenditures for new and renewal?
For renewal, if you're looking just strictly at the trenchless technologies on our water wastewater, we have historically been looking at 25% of each linear foot that we put in the ground to be trenchless. That's where we've been leveraging that technology and taking advantage. Now, obviously, there's no silver bullet. One is for everything. Look at case by case. But we have... We just finished a $26 million micro tunneling project. That project is it's a 60-inch sewer line. It's called our Cottonwood Hackberry Interceptor. So 60-inch, we micro-tunneled that. That was over 4,200 linear foot. And that was just a little over $26 million. We just finished that. We're working through some odor control with that, but we're ready to wrap that up. But that's one technology. It's just been so expensive. But in this case, it made sense. It was in a very... high visible area, a lot of residential in our Las Colinas area. It was a high impact, and it was deep, so it just made sense. But we've been doing pipe bursting. We've been doing cured pipe, CIPP pipe for decades. We've been just really going after it when it makes sense. Sometimes when we have to fix a road or the road just is deteriorated, it just makes sense to go ahead and open cut. And then at that time, we just replace the road when we do the water or wastewater.
So when you're doing the trenchless, using a trenchless technology, you open up a hole or several holes at the surface, but most of the work happens underground, right?
Yes. The pipe bursting is the biggest pipe bursting that we have done in the city is an 18-inch. We upsized it to 18-inch, and that technology it just makes sense where we don't have to say the road is in good condition, the wastewater or water line is under the pavement. We don't want to do the pavement again. It just makes sense to use those other technologies. If we're needing to upsize it, pipe burst and go through. We have on our pipe bursting on water, we've done both the pre-chlorinated method and also the alternate, which would be installing temporary water to each of the residents and then pipe burst, and then you change over each of the services over to that. That's where the pre-chlorinated is. You have all the lines in place. You have all the holes dug out where the services connect to the new line, and we pre-chlorinate it. Means we do all the testing, the pressure testing, the back tee. And then once that is everything passed, then we pull the pipe, and then that same time, as soon as it's pulled, we start reconnecting each of the services at that time.
So when you say pull the pipe, I'm interpreting that to mean you're pulling a new pipe through and connecting it to the service connections to the resident to businesses and residents.
Yes. So when we pull the pipe. There's a couple of different methods. One is sometimes they, if it's a large pipe, they use a pneumatic hammer at the as part of the head. As the head comes through and it bursts the host pipe, and then it's connected, this long, like, big snake of the new line, it's just that new line is being pulled right through that void that the right behind the head as it's being pulled through. The challenges that we've had here in the city is, one, we need to have a reputable contractor. So it's all about means and method. So you have a 100-ton pulling machine, and usually there are these rods that are screwed on, so they connect the head to these rods, and they pull the rods through, and as the rod section is pulled, then they unscrew it and put it on the contraption, and then they pull again. So it's a very efficient way. It's actually pretty quick. The construction is less invasive. The traffic is still going on. Might have some traffic control, but it takes care of not having to redo the landscaping, streets, sidewalks, any of the surfaces. There's some challenges with that method with geotech. If it's in North Texas, we have a lot of clays, so it actually works really well with clays. You get some lubricant in there, and once you pull the head, the clay just keeps it runs pretty smooth. We do have areas of our city that have sand, and sand and gravel pulling that is just more of a challenge. So we've experienced a couple of different situations that we've had to accommodate for, and then keep that in mind if we choose the pipe bursting method. But it's we've been doing that for a couple of decades with the pipe bursting.
So when you say pipe bursting, I'm assuming what you're doing is you're pulling a new pipe through an old pipe, and it bursts the old pipe, and you get a renewed pipe that has higher capacity. Is that right?
That is correct. And it's a fusible PVC is what we prefer. You can use fusible HDPE high density pipe if you want. So it's when we fuse it, it's just one big run. It may be 400 feet, 500 feet that snakes down the road. Line it up with you put the head on the new pipe, and then you have a ramp that you create that will feed into the old host pipe, and then you're pulling it through the old line. So it's quite effective, and at this time we have several contractors that are quite proficient at it. So it's a very useful and effective method. But the advantage is, if you have a 12-inch and you need to upsize that line, since you're going to be pipe bursting it, you can. So you can have a bigger size that you're pulling through the hose.
So how big a change in size can you achieve? If you start with, say, a 12-inch pipe, how large can you go?
Well, the advice is two sizes is the kind of the outside. If you actually need to go more than two sizes, we have not done this, but it has the method would be you pull twice, you upsize it, and then essentially you're using that first new pipe as a kind of a throwaway, and then you pull it again with a bigger size. So you're just doing it twice.
So when you talk about sizes, I'm assuming that the sizes are somehow related to the radius of the pipe or the diameter of the pipe?
Yes. So the sewer lines, our normal sizes is 8. We don't use 10 too often, but we have 10, 12. Sewer then is 15, and then 18. Water is an even increments. So you can, it's 12 inch, 14, 16, 18 inch for water. So there's it's just looking at the size, how many sizes are we jumping up, and then working with the contractor to see what's actually feasible with the soil conditions and also the existing conditions out there, how big we can go.
So what's the longest pull that you're able to do in under the best of conditions, let's say, in when you're pulling through clay?
Well, I probably feel uncomfortable anything over 500. So our sewer wastewater lines, we put our put manholes every 500 feet, and that's that constraint is really a maintenance for cleaning for our crews in the future. We can go longer than 500 feet, but that's just a normal or a benchmark.
And you're doing this both for potable water and sewer lines?
We do. We do for both. We've done the 18 for a sewer line. The tough part about sewer line is when you go through the manholes, so you have a choice. You have to either go, you're popping it through the manhole and then resetting the inverts. So there's definitely some prep there if it's a sewer line. But the problem or the challenge is if you're going to pull it all the way through a manhole and then cut it out, what happens is that the material is it will relax and sag. So you have to watch it, because being especially HDPE high density, when you're pulling it, it literally stretches. So you have to wait till it relaxes, and it will shrink up a little bit, and then do. So there's some things to keep in mind about PVC and HDPE.
So what you're describing, it sounds like it's focused on addressing an existing pipe to make it larger, to increase the capacity. If you have to build new, what's the technology that you use? How do you keep that underground?
The tried and true is this open cut. We have done the micro tunneling for that really deep line. Where open cut, we would just be replacing, in this case, the one that I just mentioned before with the 60 inch. There was a six lane boulevard above this. It's just been the cost benefit was definitely weighing towards micro tunneling, but open cut is the tried and true. We'll get exactly what we are expecting, and the challenge though for open cut is the existing conditions do change. We have run into old gas stations and run into a fuel tank that was been buried there for 50 years. And we had to literally shut down the project because the contractor smelled the gas in the soil. So we had to mediate the soil, you know, get our environmental crew out there, get a plan, and then register that tank with the state. So we've run across quite a few different scenarios over the years, but the open cut is the tried and true.
But going back to microtunneling, so how is that done? What's the technology that allows you to do that?
So the technology is you have this. It's similar to what we hear, or at least I hear, about these big boring machines that the Department of Transportation would just have go through a hill or a mountain or underground for these big, you know, the big openings. This one's just a little small. I mean, smaller, 60-inch. So it's not small, but it's not nearly as big as what the Transportation Department would use. But they have a cutting head on the front, and it just slowly advances, and it's a 24-hour operation. It just 24/7. They just keep it, the cutting head right in front of it, and then the spoils come out the back, and then the spoils are removed. So it's a head itself, and then they plate the void behind it. So they use plates behind it.
So it's a tunnel boring machine. It's just a smaller scale than what you use if you were building a highway tunnel.
Correct. That's a great description.
Okay, and then you line that tunnel as you would a road or a railroad tunnel with bracing to keep the material in place.
Yes, sir. And then you put the host pipe in, and then you'll fill the annular, the openings or the spacing around the hose pipe with a grout.
With grout. Okay. I get that. So what about relining? Is it part of your program relining existing pipes or existing sewers in particular?
Yes, we do. That is probably more common than the other two. Our cured in place piping, CIPP. The biggest pipe we have done is, for that size, is a 54-inch sewer line. The pipe that we were lining was concrete, and it was already being affected. You can see the deterioration in it, but also we wanted to proceed with this particular project, this 54, because of this development above the 54 was just being laid out and about to go in. So we wanted to go ahead and line it while we had the opportunity, and then add manholes. And we added a couple of manholes for accessibility. But we just didn't want to, for maintenance, mainly for maintenance, we wanted to go ahead and get this done. But the 54 is the largest, and when lining that, we look at, see if do we need it to be structural to hold up? If the hose pipe was completely gone, we want it to be intact and be structurally, or can we use something of a less strength, or the thickness can be smaller, more of a lining, and the hose pipe is okay.
So that's where you're really, essentially, you're dealing with leakage, and you want to seal that pipe from the inside.
Yes, it will take care of a lot of the issues, including any we we do need to take care of if there's a hole in the hose pipe, we go ahead and grout that. So it we prepare the hose pipe. Because whatever is the hose pipe, whatever deflections or imperfections or anything, it will reflect through the lining. And that's the challenge on that big line is when we go through, the sizing is very important. We go through and make sure it's not a different size pipe because we don't want fins or wrinkles in the line once the hot water, the treatment and curing it, once we vacate the water and then we shoot the run the camera through.
Can you give me a little bit better description about patching holes in the existing pipe? If I understand it, you install a flexible liner and then seal it. You cure it so that it becomes waterproof and solid. Is that the way it works?
Yes. It looks like a felt liner. It looks like a big sock. And how they prepare it is they dip it in or somehow they get the resin on this felt sock. And the way they insert it is actually from inside out. They kind of blow it. If you can envision having, as you take a sock and you kind of pull the tip of it, you kind of and then pull that through the I think they blow it is what I have seen, not pull it, but it unfolds inside the host, and then once it's in place, what we have done in the city is hot water. They ramp up a certain temperature. They run the hot water, fill the whole void with hot water for so long. It cures it. Then they vacate the water. And then if there's openings that need to be made, if it's a water line, we have the length where the openings need to be. They have a machine that goes through the pipe and cuts out the opening, say for the service if it's water line service, if it's a sewer line, same thing, the lateral. So they place the openings, and then they dress up the edges with some sort of so it seals it up. So it's a pretty nifty, quick way of doing a lining, and essentially you're using what's there and you're extending the life of that line for a long time. I do not know the exact or even the approximate lifetime.
And it has the advantage that you're working underground and you're minimizing the disruption at the surface level, correct?
That is correct.
So I just want to take you back. You told us a fair amount about financing. You're using grant money, you've got and bonding. Is there any other source of funds to pay for this large scale project?
Well, most of our projects are through our bond program. We do have, if it's our revenue bonds, that our water, wastewater, we look at a 50% cash, 50% bonds, revenue bonds. So we're trying to somewhat pay our way on our water, wastewater projects. The water, wastewater, we have not sought out grant money for those. We've been very successful in our drainage program for those grants.
Is the drainage, so we've seen some pictures, or I've seen some pictures of your town, and you've got some surface water running through it. Is that part of the stormwater management system?
Yes, anything with has to do with storm, flooding, that goes to address those is in our municipal drainage utility group. And that we have a fee that we collect from businesses and residents on their water bill for that drainage fee, for the MDU fee.
So that gives you this kind of the cash side of the payment, and then you borrow the, if necessary, you borrow more. Is that right?
Correct. So that program, the MDU program, has been very successful. It is exactly how we lined it out years ago. It's funding the drainage program we just finished a 5-year, $100 million bond program in our MDU. We are in our second year of a bond program, and that's a $60 million. The reason is there are increase of our fees. We lowered it to a dollar increase per month. So we're at $16 a month for a typical resident. So we're only increasing it. So next year will be $17 for their MDU that will be on their water bill. And then with that dollar increase, it translates to almost $2 million in revenue that into the program. So we're pretty close to $18 million in revenue each year. So it does help. Well, that is our debt service and our operations in maintaining our drainage system here.
Wow. Walt, it's a pretty darn impressive program that you've got here, and you're maintaining it year after year. What's fascinating to me is hearing the extent of the work that you're doing below the surface, taking advantage of these technologies to minimize surface disruption and still meet the needs. So I'm really appreciative that you spent the time with us to tell us about this program, and we'll try to keep an eye on it from a distance and learn more about what you're doing. So thank you very much for talking to us this morning.
Okay. Appreciate the time.
Okay. Take care. Bye.
Anytime. Bye-bye.
Thanks for listening to The Infrastructure Show. If you enjoyed the conversation as much as we did, please subscribe to our podcast and encourage your friends to join us too. The Infrastructure Show is recorded at the Studio Media Recording Company in Evanston, Illinois, under the direction of Scott Steinman, recording engineer with a commitment to great sound. Our producer is Marion Sowers, a journalist with a passion for infrastructure. And I'm Professor Joseph Schoeffer. Few people are more curious about infrastructure than I am.